Hello and welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam Five, and thank you very much for downloading episode 17, part 2 of the discussion about massive multiplayer online role-playing games. The IDDFOS webpage, schnotes, and links to other podcasts can be found by going to www.anim5.com. Click on the little yellow dummy, and you'll be sent to the page for this podcast. On that page, you'll find plenty of stuff, including an audio button. Come on into the show by sending an audio. Go with the flow. It costs you no dough. Am I sorry for the bad rhymes? No. I rambled on a bit in episode 16, and I covered only a few of the hundreds of aspects about MMO, about the MMO topic, but here in part two, I'll try to concentrate more on listener questions. But as always, here at the top of the podcast is the time for shout-outs. Email, and thanks to friends and correspondents, and so here we go. A hearty welcome and a thank you to Lehi, the Linux Cowboy, who joined the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space Frapper Map, bringing the number of the most elite and superb humans on the planet up to 5. Thank you indeed, Linux Cowboy. He now sits on the veranda, sipping a fine aperitif, along with myself, the Norwegian Viking Mr. T., Mr. Mick Bradley of the Round Table and Misfit Brew. Find both of those podcasts at www.harpingmonkey.com. And also on the Frapper Map of the finest folk, Digger's Story. Now, speaking of Digger's Story, I find myself embarrassed and running far behind in thanks to Digger Poots and Patter, because I completely missed the fact that some of my work was yet again featured in their podcast. I hadn't heard Digger Story episode 29 when I posted last week's show, but there I am, talking and being talked about in their last episode. My deepest thanks and continued hope that Digger, Poots, and Patter will prove me wrong in my doubts about world peace. It's definitely a better world than it would be if good and peaceful people like the gang at Digger Story weren't around. I'm very glad that they are, and that the fight continues. And a hearty congratulations to them, because in the conclusion of the podcast Pickle Wars, they were named in the top 10. Number 2, I believe. Excellent. Do yourself a favor and check out that podcast, Digger Story, at www.diggerstory.com, DiggerStory.com. Next, we have an email that I retrieved just prior to recording. This is in just under the wire, and I am happy indeed to get it. Thank you, Derek, or Agent Desilu. This is a response to episode 12. The one about the giant granite time capsule. And he writes, subject line is my time capsule. Hello, Anim. This is Derek from Texas. I've been listening to your podcast for a while now, and I have to agree with Sam Chupp from Bears Grove. It's like eating a bran muffin. It takes time to digest, and sometimes a little hard to chew, but in the end, it's good for you. I don't know what to think about that. Okay, it's good for you. Always include IDDFOS as a part of your podcast diet for good roughage and high fiber. well, super. All right. When did Mr. Sam Chupp make that observation? Well, whatever. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chupp. That's a unique perspective. Good to hear. Back to the letter.
I particularly loved your Why to Read episodes and have recommended them to some classmates in a, believe it or not, reading content course I have to take for my degree.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Recommended to as many people as you as you wish. Those two episodes in particular were years in the writing, and they predate IDDFOS by quite a while. And I'm very glad that you like those.
Anyway, to the point, my time capsule. I think the point of this is to accurately depict the best and worst of humanity when looked at in an unbiased light. What really made us tick? What really brought about our beginnings and endings? In the compartments, I would probably include the works of Shakespeare, as well as the works of whatever the major playwrights are for other civilizations. Probably the Ramayana, the Tao Te Ching, the Prince, the biographies of major military leaders from around the globe, possibly even the biographies of several peacemakers like Churchill, Mandela, Mao Zedong, George Washington, more bios on major scientists, all of these on some compressed format storage device, be it microfilms or fiches or in computer-type devices. I like the DNA thing you suggested. I think I might do the same thing, but with a disclaimer that the restoration of the DNA and cultivation of its life will lead to all the things and more listed in the above works, eventually. And that, even though such things would happen, the human species was simply that, and suffered for it. I'd inscribe on one side of the slab the contents of several government documents, the poem Fire and Ice by Robert Frost, the poem Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night by Dylan Thomas, and The Raven by Poe. I suppose the reflective surface would be useful, and on it I'd inscribe a Rosetta Stone of language, very small, very complete. I would include music, radio broadcasts, TV specials, definitive movies of all kinds on high-density storage devices, both in visual and audio form, and films of dances from various cultures, also scans of artworks from many cultures. It's hard to be complete about how the world was when there is so much that can't or isn't retrieved for delivery yet. I might include major religious works from every religion possible, but only next to books about war, tactical, factual, and biographical. Also a disclaimer that the two are linked indubitably. If one of the compartments alone was a hard drive, you could easily put several terabytes or more in the capsule, which frees up so much space for anything you'd like. In the heart of the capsule, I'd put the recorded sounds and sights of laughter, sadness, anger, distress, pain, illness, dying, giving birth, having sex, stubbing your toe, petting a cat, kissing, hugging, sighing, coughing, sneezing, farting, breastfeeding, cracking your knuckles, pulling a muscle, having a stomach ache, eating, bathing, sleeping, and a million other things that people do that make them beautiful and grotesque. Anyway, I think that's what I'd put. Derek.
Thank you so much, Derek, for that input. I'm definitely curious about what people would place in that compartmented monolith, and I welcome any further input from listeners about that. It seems the time capsule episode holds a topic of interest for quite a few listeners. In an email I got from Jeff of Gamer the Podcasting, he mentioned that they were discussing the granite time capsule thing in the car on the way to Origins. I'm extremely interested to know what selections Jeff and Caroline and Sasha made as well. So excellent feedback. I may have to revisit Derek's letter in the next episode because I think it deserves more attention than a straight reading. So if you hear it read again next week, please bear with me. And anyone else that cares to offer their input about that particular episode, again, please feel free. And next, an email feedback from Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big In This? Always fantastic to hear from Sarah. Her comments in this email are directly related to last week's episode. And she writes,
Hi, Adam. Just listening to part one of your online gaming cast, and it got me thinking. On the subject of the political intrigue, conflict, and bloodshed that make up most RPG games, are there any games out there that are not in this theme? My favorite games are ones of exploration and world interaction that don't involve high levels of fear and adrenaline. I've always wondered if our gaming community suffers from excluding players who are more interested in these less conflict-fueled games. What are your thoughts? Keep casting, enjoying every minute. Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah. You know, I'm not really sure there are, if we're talking about online massive multiplayer, but then I suppose it depends on what can really be considered a game. As far as nonviolent multiplayer online worlds, I'd have to say that Second Life, the world that's included in one of the links Mr. T sent us, Second Life, I'm pretty sure it's not a shoot 'em up or a hack and slash, but more of a contemporary 3D social gathering. I haven't logged into that one or played around in there, but from the impression I get, it's more on the order of a supercharged 3D chat world where you can play with design and fashion and flirtation and buy and sell properties. I did a little digging and I came up with this about Second Life. It's directly from their frequently asked questions sheet. And this is one of the questions. Is Second Life an MMORPG? And here's their answer.
Yes and no. While the Second Life interface and display are similar to most popular massively multiplayer online role-playing games, there are two key unique differences. One, creativity. Second Life provides near unlimited freedom to its residents. This world really is whatever you make it, and your experience is what you want out of it. If you want to hang out with your friends in a garden or a nightclub, you can. If you want to go shopping or fight dragons, you can. If you want to start a business, create a game, or build a skyscraper, you can. It's up to you. Number two, ownership. Instead of paying a monthly subscription fee, residents can obtain their first basic account for free. Additional basic accounts cost a one-time flat fee of just $9.95. That's $9.95. If you choose to own land to live, work, and build on, you pay a monthly lease fee based on the amount of land you own. You also own anything you create. Residents retain IP rights over their in-world creations.
I have to do a little more research on that. I don't know what IP rights stands for. Internet Protocol? No, I don't think so. I wonder what IP rights stands for. I'll check that out. That's an interesting twist, though, on virtual property. In the case of Blizzard and World of Warcraft, they maintain that anything you earn in gold or items or even the level of your character, they maintain it's the sole property of Blizzard and that you cannot sell any of it for real-world currency. Their position is pretty much that you're only renting those things in the game and you're renting the game experience from Blizzard for a monthly fee. That's interesting. Second Life says it's all yours and sell it. But anyway, about Second Life, if you can call it a game, it certainly isn't a bloody one. And it's certainly a massive multiplayer online world. But I'm ignorant of the degree of exploration or puzzle solving that you can do there. Anyone listening who has in-world experience of Second Life, please write in and fill in the gaps. Also, in the category of nonviolent multiplayer massive worlds, Active Worlds, which I'll put a link to in the show notes, is another social 3D world. In Active Worlds, the paid members can create their own personalized 3D environments, and they can build their own terrain layouts and architecture and objects. And one of these private worlds is called AWRPG, or DRADA, as far as its internal storyline goes. It's called DRADA. And that qualifies as a game because there's puzzles to solve and there's places to explore. There is violence there, but it's not compulsory. So far as I remember, when I last left it, you could choose to engage in combat or not. I mentioned them briefly in episode number 9. And I'll throw in a link to pictures of some of the objects and the architecture that I built for them while I was running around. I was running around in there as a character named Wolfram. I made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of items for that place. But anyways, yeah, step into AWRPG and tell them Wolfram sent you. You can get to that from activeworlds.com. As to computer games in general that are sold for individual gamers, not online or not requiring an internet connection, the only non-violent ones that I can think of are out of PC gaming history. Myst, obviously, is the grandmother of them all. And there were also the incredibly fun Sierra games ages ago, like King's Quest, the King's Quest series, the Space Quest series. And they offered, puzzle solving and fun gameplay, but they were very linear. They were very tracked, and they certainly weren't on the scale and 3D massiveness of the current MMO worlds. But I agree with you. I agree with you entirely as regards a large number of potential online gamers being ignored. And that's a market thing. It's in favor of a majority that seem to want battle and blood. I, for one, think it would be nice to log on to and enter a world the size of Azeroth where you could just go explore, solve puzzles, discover tombs, statues, monuments, living civilizations of NPCs. Essentially, the game is you have to piece together the cartography and the history of the place as you go. It'd be nice to do that without worrying the whole time about being attacked or having to kill things constantly. And so, if anyone listening can come up with a list, however short, of games that fit the category of massive world 3D environment multiplayer that is there simply for exploration and interaction without the face bashing and limb chopping, please write in. Or send an audio. Let me know, and therefore Sarah as well. I'm going to take a quick break here, and when I return, we'll get right back into MMORPGs Part 2. Now, there were no other responses to last week's episode, so I'll just jump straight in and get to the main body of the discussion for Part 2. And that will begin with the second of the two audio files that Mr. T sent me weeks ago. And here it is.
This is, of course, the World of Warcraft, or the World of Azeroth. That's the world it's really called. Now, I play this game since Christmas. I still haven't seen it all. Now, I'm a working man with a social life, so I don't have the time to play this game 18 hours a day. But that's what some people do. They practically live their lives in this virtual world. Now, I'll admit that during the first 3 months I played this game, every day from 5 to 8 hours at a time, I was hooked, I'll admit it. It was fun, a lot of fun. I met a lot of interesting people. Some were nice, some were a-holes. But after a while, I started feeling that it was taking over my life. So I quit my guild, dropped trying to boost my rank, and cut down on the game time. Mostly because I didn't want to lose my girlfriend and friends in real life. But what about the people that doesn't have friends in the real world? Will they have the same compulsion? Now, I don't have the answer. As you, I'm just going for my own ignorance. I'm going to tell some stories about some people. Some I know and some I've just read or heard about. I'll leave the links to the articles in the mail for this notes. Now, a friend of a friend. He's a shy person. He works as a security guard. When he's not working, he plays the World of Warcraft. Now, this has gone on for a year. He was a normal, clean, mildly social person, but now he hasn't lifted a finger in his own apartment since. And the smell of mildew can be smelled from the street outside. Now it's bad. Lately he's been getting these mysterious headaches. I wonder why. In the highest ranking player in a server, was asked 10 questions in a World of Warcraft magazine. How much do you play? 18 hours a day. If I didn't have to sleep, I would play 24. Any job? Well, I always like a full-time job. Social life. All my real life friends play WoW. Now, I can go on, but you get my point. There is something disturbingly wrong with that. Now, how about this one from Wired? EverQuest players often joke about the addictive nature of the game, often referring to it as Evercrack. But for 21-year-old Sean Woolley, the game became deadly serious, and his mother is preparing to sue Sony Entertainment for his suicide. This is a guy who shot himself in front of a computer. and his mother is sure that it was the game's fault. Or did it have something else to do with it? Was it his friends, probably online, which drove him to do it? We'll never know, because, as the article states, Sony Entertainment does not want to give out any personal information. But still, is this the same issue as the violent games and movies? Or is this something completely new? Can we blame the games for these actions, or is it the people playing it? Must MMOs be so deadly negative? Okay, now this is from the Alter Ego Photography exhibition by Robbie Cooper. Jason, aka Blade Runner, he has a muscular disability, is wheelchair bound, and breathes with the aid of a respirator. Online, in the game Star Wars Galaxies, he is Boba Fett-like bounty hunter. In the game, Jason is equal to all other players. For the first time, he can socialize, take part in activities as if he had no handicaps at all. It's virtual, but for him it's very real. Now, from the same article, we hear about April, a shy girl with no self-esteem. Now, many use their avatars to experiment and find out what kind of persons they want to be in real life too, like the shy and insecure April, who played EverQuest. Now, because you are in an environment where you are not really you, there's a filter. You can experiment with role-playing. She ended up dropping her role-playing and just being herself. She found people liked her for it, and that boosted her self-confidence. She brought this back in the real world and actually got an improvement in her social life and self-esteem. I see something very positive here as well. It can't all be bad. Well, I don't want to steal more of your time, Adam. What do you think? I'll leave the rest up to you. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Now, I'll only add to that audio. Thank you, Mr. T, for sending that in weeks ago. I'll only add to that these questions from one of his earlier letters. Can MMORPGs ruin lives? Can they save lives? Is life a game? To jump right in, can they ruin lives? Can a new and engrossing form of interactive entertainment ruin your life? I would say no. An MMORPG cannot ruin your life. Just like Smokey the Bear says, only you can prevent forest fires. I say only you can ruin your life. But you can make use of any number of ways to pass your time while you do it. Online games are only one small slice of the personal entertainment pie. My opinion is the negative reporting and the horror stories surrounding MMOs are dealing with people who are already living a life that has gone sour for them. People who already have sad problems and sign on to whatever game it is, not for a few hours of escape, but they do it to avoid real life altogether, because it's just too painful for them to face. And if there's any finger-pointing to be done as far as genuine addiction and ruined lives go, well, drug addiction and alcoholism win out in far, far greater numbers than spending too much time online. That's my opinion. And it's also my opinion that the news agencies eat up stories like this. They love stories like lost jobs, divorces, suicides, if they have to do with the gaming industry or MMOs, because they're always on the lookout for new things that people should be afraid of. Something like an online interactive 3D world, in the mainstream, believe it or not, it's not widely understood. The bulk of the population, at least in the U.S., they're just not all that familiar with it, and so it's an easy target for scapegoating, not only by news agencies, but by politicians and activist groups. No, I don't believe they can ruin lives. What's your opinion? That's my opinion. What's your opinion? Send in an email or an audio. Do you think MMORPGs can destroy lives? I'd urge you, if you would, to go ahead and check out those links. They're referred back to in episode 16 in the notes for this podcast. The links to the articles that describe the good and the bad, the ones that Mr. T sent, they're very apt, very telling, and they're worth your time to check out. It's a valid question. Do you think it can ruin life? Do you think that player Fred signing into Second Life, forming an online romantic relationship with player Francine, leaves his wife Phyllis because of the game? Or was it likely that player Fred was not all that happy in his marriage to begin with? And if that sad, shy security guard hadn't gotten involved in an MMO, would he have spent more time cleaning his apartment and gone out suddenly to meet new friends? Who knows? I kind of doubt it, but, you know, you don't really know. And I'm the first one to admit there are aspects of online worlds that make it particularly easy to discard your real life and just live there, especially if you're not happy with your own reality. Very powerful aspects of them. If you're able to live a virtual life of greater satisfaction and higher self-esteem in a digital world, then the appeal of novelty when you first start playing may wear off, but the draw of comfort and interactive power may not. That's just a guess. That's just my speculation. I'm going to go totally out on a limb here, and I'm going to speculate wildly about Mr. T. He said he was very heavily involved in the game World of Warcraft in the first 3 months he was playing it. I was too. Absolutely. Just the sheer novelty of it, the new world to explore aspect of it, was extremely appealing. And I'd find myself eager to get back into World, mainly because I wanted to see what comes next. And the game itself, and I'm sure a lot of the other MMOs, the game fosters an environment where you as a player create your own cliffhangers just by signing off. But in Mr. T's case, I think a combination of that novelty wearing off and the value of his own life reasserted itself, just as it would, I think, with most of the online players. That combination brought the entertainment into a realistic perspective. Now, Mr. T, I'm going to suppose, does not feel a sense of helplessness or dissatisfaction with his own real life, and therefore he didn't play the game as a refuge from that, but as a really, really fun form of entertainment. He reached a saturation point and a renewed sense of perspective, just as I did. You know, and that's not to say that within the first 3 months there was absolutely nothing that could pry him or me away from the computer screen. It's just, you know, really enthusiastic, heavy involvement in a new thing. Life didn't go completely by the boards. But as he said, sadly, there are players who do live their lives in these games. Some of them invest a great deal into them, and I'm not just talking about money. I mean, for a movie you'd pay something like $7.50 and up, depending on where you go and where you live. Or if you're going to buy a DVD, you'd spend $12, $14, maybe even $20 for a current movie. And for that, you get almost 2 hours of non-interactive entertainment. With a broadband internet connection and $15 a month, you can argue that you get as much entertainment from an MMO as you're willing to stay online and awake for. Now, the investment that some of these players make is in the value of their characters and the abilities they possess in the virtual world. I'm going to find that famous article that first dealt with the economies of these worlds, and I'll post a link to that as well. In this article, I can't remember the author, I apologize, but I'll put a link to it. They cite a case where one young woman was homeless. She had nothing but a change of clothes and her laptop, but she was still a member of an online world. And in it, with her laptop, she was building a palace that she owned, and in terms of social standing, she was practically royalty. I think one of the aspects of this form of entertainment that makes it a prime target for blame, as far as ruining lives, is that a massive multiplayer puts you in a world where all the real-life rules are changed. And the rules you're left with apply to everybody. And the instant you decide psychologically that the digital world you're moving around in is real, that's when the body waste hits the spinning blades. In the real world, wealth, power, attractiveness, and freedom are all obtainable only if you live in the right place at the right time, or if you're lucky enough and smart enough not to get caught getting them illegally. attractiveness being relative and the most difficult. Now, with all the money you need at your disposal in the real world, you might have to go through extensive surgical procedures and endure months of pain to bring your physical appearance up to the impossible standards set by the popular media. The great god TV has determined for us what beautiful and ugly are. It just neglects to tell us that beauty is only obtainable in post-production. But wealth and power, that you can get here in the real world, sometimes even legally, but it takes years of study, struggle, work, luck, networking with the right people, doing the right favors, operating sometimes shady, sometimes above board in the right circles of politics and finance, and sometimes laying low and becoming invisible. All of it on a world stage that is anything but fair. And not everyone starts out with the same advantages or disadvantages. It's not a level playing field. And there's no guarantee you'll get what you're going after, no matter how hard you try. There is one guarantee, though. You absolutely will end up with squat if you don't try. That goes for relationships as well as money. But online, it's a different story. In a virtual game world, everyone starts with a character that has next to nothing. And it's solely through the actions of the player and the amount of time and energy put into the game that the character grows in power and wealth. Attractiveness is built in. All you need to do in an MMO to be drop-dead gorgeous is select the avatar you want. That's the easiest thing of all. And for the rest, for the power, the money, prestige, if you will, it's a gradual progression. It's a progression through stages of accomplishment, and they're all part of the set of universally applied rules within the game. It is a level playing field. As that article I mentioned before, that article stated, it's a true meritocracy. Luck can play a part from time to time, but in the long run, you are going to get the power level, equipment, property, items, etc. that you want if you're willing to put in the time and energy. You can even become the leader of a great big honkin' guild of players. You could be the chief of a tribe or captain of a squad, whatever. And you know, it's interesting to note, too, that no matter what kind of world you create digitally, as soon as you let real-world personalities into it, you get the same panorama of human comedy that you get in real life, in the real world. Even with the universally applied rules and the level playing field where all who strive will get rewarded, you still get beggars. You still get an occasional player character coming up to you and asking you for gold. That blows my mind. What kind of person are you in real life that you'll come into a game to beg for money that you can get by just playing the damn game? I don't understand that. I have a tough time with that, and I really try not to picture who that player person actually is in real life. Some players go into these worlds to make themselves feel better by making others feel bad. I remember my wife commenting the other day. She was playing a new character, a mage, I think, this is in World of Warcraft. And I was watching as she went along. She was still very early in the curve. She was level 11. And this ludicrous little turd comes along and challenges her to a duel. Now, this guy was level 32, a level 32 hunter. And she said, check this guy out. He won't stop challenging me to a duel. He's a level 32 with armor, dual wield, a gun, a killer wolf pet. And here I am running along the road with a lobster bib cape, yodel pants, and a stick. What's he going to get out of beating me? What indeed? Well, it's time for another break, I think. Please listen to these two podcast promos, and I'll be back in a bit. And just so you know, I'm still addressing that first question in my usual rambling, get-to-the-point-anim way. The first question of, can MMORPGs ruin lives? I know I've already answered no, but I'm just gonna go further into it. There's an ongoing argument of ethics and motivation involving all of these online worlds on the subject of in-game currency and real-world credit cards. And there's a whole industry that's popped up like a suckerfish on a whale, an industry that registers and plays characters whose sole function is to acquire gold or simoleons or linden dollars or platinum or whatever the currency is in large quantities. And they sell them for real-world money to players who don't want to earn it in the game. Many players, myself included, think this stinks, because it means that Mr. Wealthy's spoiled son can buy leveled-up characters with all the trimmings and run around in all his favorite RPGs kicking butt and playing the big shot without having earned any of the items or skills he possesses. Just like in real life. But what motivates this? Why bother playing the game at all, then? Does someone like that come in to be entertained? Or are they looking for an ego boost? And this is the part where investment comes in. Some players, as I said, they invest not just time, not just money, but themselves into their character. The danger alarm should go off when you equate the value and achievement of your avatar with your own value as a human being. When that starts happening, put your mouse down slowly and step away from the machine. Let's follow an oversimplified example, mainly because I can't think of a complex one. If Joe Schmagegi is a payroll clerk in a cubicle among dozens of other payroll clerks, hates his job, hates his own lack of success, is socially awkward, buys into the standard of attractiveness set by the media and therefore considers himself to be an ugly slob, lives in a tiny, dirty apartment, and is ultimately a person who gets dumped on, abused, and taken advantage of at every turn because he can't stand confrontation, a real-life Walter Mitty but without imagination. Here in the real world, he believes he has no power. The rules seem to change all the time, and change is very unpredictable. Life is tough to figure out. Am I engaging in armchair psychology without a degree? Sure, I could be wrong. Tell me if I am. I'm probably wrong every week about a lot of things. Somebody, let me know. But I'll continue. Online, it's a different story. For Joe Schmagegi, online, it's different. He isn't Joe, he's Thunder. And this appeals to everyone. It's not just our example, Joe. With an internet connection, if you've got an internet connection and you have access to an online world, you get the opportunity to reinvent yourself. You can become somebody totally different. Without having to move to a new city or change your wardrobe, you can be someone completely new in a completely new place. Just for sheer entertainment value, who could turn that down? Not everybody's interested in it, but it's got to hold a wide appeal. But let's get back to Joe. Online. Online, he doesn't get pushed around. Not for long, anyway. He can look like any hunk from any shaving commercial. He can kick the shit out of any threat that comes along. He can be the hero of his dreams and get the girl. He can get the princess and the palace and the power. If his real life suffers for it, so what? He hates that anyway. What's real life ever done for him? He never goes anywhere or does anything to meet other people in real life anyway, so what is he missing? His apartment is filthier day by day, so what? Whoever sees it but him. And only when he tears his eyes away from the screen does he look at it. Some days he may even call in sick just to stay home and play some more, or catch up on some sleep so he can play all night again. But what's going to happen to him psychologically? What will happen to Joe and his minute sense of self-esteem when his online Uber character, Thundar, the warrior of Stormwind, a maxed-out level 60 fighter with all the toys and trinkets and gear that a digital persona can possibly carry, what will happen to Joe when he discovers that he's still not getting the respect and admiration he craves? What happens to Joe when he's still getting dissed by packs of 14-year-olds who are quicker with insults than he is? What happens when he finds out that his hot night elf girlfriend is really a bored, overweight lumber salesman from Oregon named Fred? What happens when the inevitable moment comes that he wakes up and realizes he's bored with this place? That nothing he's done in that world is real, that he's invested himself along with ungodly hours, days, and months of his time into an elaborate construct of pixels. If he's equated his own worth with that of the avatar he pushes in the MMO, what happens when he still fails in forming healthy give-and-take relationships, even in a digital sense? What do you think happens? What emotional impact will that have? Write in. Tell me. But did the online role-playing game ruin his life? Or was it a life already ripe for breakdown without plugging anything in? All right, I think I've gone a long way towards not answering the first question very well. But I'm going to move on to the second one. What about the second one? Can MMORPGs save lives? And I think the answer here would have to be no. My opinion. But they can enhance lives. Now, in some cases, I would say literally they can save lives in a very mundane sense. It may be urgent. It may be urban legend. But I recall hearing a few stories of online players having physical attacks of one kind or another, strokes, seizures, even heart attacks, and typing in their home addresses and requesting other players to call 911 because they, the victim, weren't within reach of their phone. Now, that's life-saving in the literal, mundane, but very real sense, and I'm sure the question asked, though, is in a different vein. So I'd say, no, it can't save lives, but it can certainly enhance lives. Taking a point at a time. Again, the positive articles that were linked to in the notes from last week. Go ahead and read a couple of those. But I'll choose a specific example of the possibility that lives could be saved by MMOs. And this is only speculation because I'm not a parent. I am not a parent. I don't have any children. But if I were given a choice between letting my kid go out at night so she could hang out with her friends in front of the local convenience store or the park or even down the street, I think I'd much rather she were safe in her room hanging out in an avatar with her friends doing a dungeon crawl. And I definitely talk with her about the predators online. I would definitely try to hammer home the fact that there really are low-life scumbags out there who will try to get her to give her real-life information and try to arrange a real-life rendezvous strictly for the purpose of rape or worse. Sickness and murder will find their way in everywhere. They just will. It's a sad fact. But so long as she knows and isn't an idiot about what she tells others online, it seems to me that she'd have way less chance of being killed by getting into a car with some drunk dipshit if instead of being out at night, she were running around in a digital world in her own home. Now, in-person social interaction wouldn't suffer. She'd get that every day at school. That's real-world stuff, where real-world skills either develop or fall unused, but it would be a part of her growing up. But as to after-dinner gallivanting with her friends at night, could an MMO online role-playing game be a lifesaver there? Maybe. Maybe. I'd say it was 10 times better than television anyway. And rather than having a phone and only talking to one friend at a time, she could be communicating with lots of friends at once in a pleasant place. Or a crappy place. You never know. They might all want to go goth and hang out in the Undercity. What do I know? I don't even have a daughter or a son. I've got 2 dogs, and they don't show any interest in PCs. Although I'll tell you one thing, they sure know precisely and to the split second when I'm in the middle of a great battle with a Yeti, because that's when they start whining and running around and scratching the door to go out. I think I've gone off topic here. Excuse me, I'm getting hoarse. Going into a second aspect of it. Second aspect of the question, can MMORPGs save lives? Mobility and communication and interaction on a scale that's unachievable in real life. The prime example would be Jason from that article about the alter ego photography exhibit in that link that Mr. T sent. Now, here's an individual that's afforded at least some relief from the constraints of a severe handicap. And there could be speculation that his life would be far more drab and miserable without the interaction of a 3D world. But could you say that it was on the road to ruin? I wouldn't. I wouldn't. The handicapped people I've known are generally 10 times stronger of character and depth than most of us. And they don't need their self-image bolstered by a pretend digital persona. But having one, I would guess, can't help but give a few more enjoyable and shared memories with friends that they might never have known. Now, I don't know that an MMO particularly saves the lives of a handicapped person, but it certainly can act as an effective enhancement of life. I gotta get my voice back. I'm gonna take a quick break here and maybe gargle something with salt in it or have some hot coffee or something. Sorry about this. Back in a bit. Okay, back, and not much better as far as the voice goes, but I'd like to take a quick moment and step into a little sidebar and ask a question here. I'd like to ask a question for anyone listening that might know, because I don't. Since episode 16, I kept thinking of that five senses thing about online worlds offering two of them, sight and sound, and being thoroughly convincing using just those two. I wonder, is there a game out there that offers a three-dimensional massive world using only sound? Essentially, a massive online fantasy world for the blind. Is it, do any of you know? Does anyone listening to this know? Because it struck me that using the 3D effects of stereo positioning coupled with the technology of Skype or Ventrilo for the players to talk directly to each other in the game, a blind person could enter an alternate audio world where the terrain is mapped out by the sound of their footsteps, crunchy on gravel, sharp clacking on stone, dull and thudding on wood, soft on forest moss, etc., along with little localized sound as they move theoretically, physically within this environment, along with the sounds of waterfalls. You could have close and distant creature growls. There's no reason to exclude monsters to fight if they're called for, if it's a popular thing and they want to do it. Perhaps a distant volcano rumbling, always to the north. Maybe distant waves breaking along the shoreline, always to the east, so audio orientation is possible. Towns scattered throughout the world, and each could have a central gazebo where a tune is played that can always be identified as the song of that town, like the Song of Noodleville or the Anthem of Wolfshire or whatever. Basically a massive world that consists of localized sound cues. If that hasn't been done yet, is anybody working on it? And why shouldn't blind people get to play in an alternate world too? Would a blind person want to play in a world like that? And what would be appealing in it for discovery and interaction? I think it's a worthy undertaking. So if anybody knows if that's under development or has been done already or whatever, please let me know. I'd be interested to find out. I've been thinking about it since last week. Okay, getting back to, can MMORPGs save lives? A third aspect, if not life-saving, then maybe enhancement. The economic savings. Just the economic savings in terms of entertainment value. And this is the case that's to be made for the entertainment aspect of MMOs as far as the grown-up gamer community goes. PC gamer, anyway. The amount of money saved versus the amount of money versus the amount of time spent in the game. It's definitely fun to get in the car and go to a party or go out to dinner or go to a movie or into the city to see a show, but economically and aesthetically, is it becoming less and less worth it? Because online you'll find environments of all sorts, but in World of Warcraft, for example, you won't find graffiti-covered bridges. You won't find broken glass and garbage. You won't get mugged for real cash or possibly killed. You won't get slammed off the road by a drunk driver, and you won't sit in a theater behind some tall, loud person on his cell phone. For the money spent, in terms of entertainment value received, VR has it all over real life in spades. But on the other hand, you miss out on the social, personal interaction. If you want any kind of social life, if you want to maintain a relationship with your girlfriend or boyfriend, then you've got to know when to shut off the machine and remember that it's all just pixels. And as far as RPGs go, going back to what I said in episode 16, these MMORPGs, to my mind, aren't really role-playing games. If you want a true role-playing game, then you go to a gaming table preferably one that's got lots of people that you know and get along with, where you're interacting with them, where you're interacting with live people, you're in person, and your character can get drunk, pick a fight, and throw the barkeep through his own window. You can't just up and do that in an MMO. All the props are there, but none of the freedom. I think I wandered without mercy on that second question, too. Sorry about that. I'll just move on. Third question. Is life a game? That could be a show in itself, but I'll take a crack at that. And I hope you all will, too, with write-in responses. Are you getting tired of hearing me saying that? I am. Is life a game? Well, that depends entirely on your point of view, I think. If you get up close and personal, take it from hour to hour or year to year, measuring your success either by money, more toys, more sex, or even a few more hours to remain alive, as some people in the world struggle for, then no, it isn't a game, because games have consistent rules, and if you lose, you can play again. But what constitutes losing in real life? Death? Is it death or is it poverty? Or is losing isolation without friends? Or is losing extreme wealth? Do you lose the game if you have extreme wealth but you have no desire to live? How do you lose life if it's a game? If death is losing, then everybody loses eventually. If it's a high quality of life that qualifies as a win, then the bulk of humanity is lost already. If winning the game of life means that you have steady work and are assured the basic necessities of living, being just food, water, shelter, and clothing, then a great many people have won. Or at least they'll remain winners until they die. The scale, it's the scale and the point of view you use to examine the question, is life a game, that alters the answer. Alters it considerably. If you compare a human life with that of a digital game world character, there are chilling similarities. The real life human and the digital avatar both have to work for success within a set of rules. Both will come to an end, and the struggles of both can seem pretty pointless when looked at on an infinite timeline. I recall getting a game card from a local game store, and I was talking to the guy behind the counter about the game. This is World of Warcraft, of course. He seemed appalled. He was absolutely appalled that I wasn't going to start raiding high-level instances with groups of level 60 when I reached that point. And I said, why should I? I don't like playing with other characters. They're human. And he just kind of blinked. He said, well, don't you want to get the purple armor sets and the weapons? And I said, to what end? Why should I? I don't need them to play the game even when I reach 60. What's the point of turning the game into an obligation and a form of work just to get rare items that I don't need? I don't know what he thought of that. He didn't answer me. He just looked a little perturbed. But in real life, the same is said in literature. The same is said in holy books. On this plane, all is emptiness and a chase after the wind. I'll refer you again back to episode 12. The earth isn't going to last forever. And the oldest human legend that exists is no more than a quick squeak in a cosmic timeline. So is life a meaningful journey repeated as a soul until a new plane is achieved through struggle and accomplishment? Or do we all just disappear, like a digital character when you hit the off button? Sobering thoughts. Are some PC game characters better than others? Are some humans better rolled characters than others? Are there godlike beings running this universe like a PC game, rolling us humans up like characters? Look, I rolled Louis Pasteur. He's going to save the lives of millions by introducing germ theory to medicine. Look, I rolled Joe Schmagegi. He isn't going to do jack shit for anybody, not even himself. Life may be a game. Life may be a game, but I think each individual player has to decide for herself or himself just what it means to win. I think a lot of people that we tend to think of as particularly unique and successful, I think those are the ones that didn't give a damn about the popular rules and made up new rules for themselves. You want to play your character? Your real life you and defeat the dragon boss? I guess it takes a new way of looking at the board and the dice. Maybe you throw them both away and just go at the goals you decide are important and play it with a passion, so long as you possess it. Wow, that sounded so profound. I'm not really sure how to close this. I'm not really sure how to bring this show to a close. I think I'll just ask a few more questions that we didn't get to and ask that you write in or audio with the responses, regardless of what the next show will be about. I'll certainly read the emails and play the audio. Here's a few questions to ponder. Do you think the present state of online entertainment will escalate to other aspects of society? For example, companies form. A company forms. It rents a building. It sets up departments. It hires people and essentially provides a service or a product that's pretty much just words on paper. Consulting firms, insurance agencies, market analysts, software companies. I mean, you have to stop and think for a second when you look at a skyscraper office building. You see thousands of people come and go every day. And there's lots of food, water, air conditioning, and stationery being pumped into these buildings every day. What comes out of them? What product exits these buildings? So far as I can tell, contracts and reports and orders for tangible goods, or orders to satellite-owned buildings and businesses to produce the tangible goods. Words. Now, don't you think it'd be a hell of a lot cheaper and more efficient to create virtual workspaces, hiring the same number of people but eliminating the need for the brick-and-mortar physical space? The same product can be produced. The same executive-filtered conglomeration of words and numbers can trickle out of these companies. You just wouldn't have to crowd actual human beings into a giant physical box to make it happen. You wouldn't have to pay outrageous rents, and you wouldn't have to buy office furniture or cubicle separators. Is this already happening to a certain extent with telecommuting? I mean, am I just going on about old news here? But I'd be interested to see that. Virtual office spaces. They'd know you'd shown up for work because your avatar would be sitting there at your desk and some kind of output or input would be going on. Sounds a little Orwellian. Or back to entertainment again. Is there a future job market for people who are quick-witted, imaginative, and can type fast or speak in character well? What if the MMORPG companies, the game companies, decided to hire human actors to run in-game non-player characters, or if not all of them, then some of them, some high-level NPCs. The predictability of the game decreases if they do that, and the interactive nature of the legitimate game world increases. The game is playing back at you. It's not just the other players who only seem to want stats increases instead of roleplay, but a hired performer within the game is a legitimate, thinking, bona fide piece of the official game structure that happens to be human. Think that'll happen? I think it already did in the beta testing of WoW. I'd certainly love to see it happen again on a large scale, but I don't know. They seem to be doing well enough without that. And finally, what if the trend of real-life dollars and euros being traded for in-world items and currency continues? What if that trend moves on? There's no reason to believe that it won't. Would there also be a market for real-life objects manufactured based on in-game objects? Would you pay to own a plastic model version of a World of Warcraft Raptor, if that's your mount, if that's what you ride around in World of Warcraft, or an authorized replica of the Axe of the Deep Woods that you could get out of the Franklin Mint catalog? Would you buy that? Or if you play some other MMO, some item within the game, manufactured in real life that you could hold in your hand? And what if the game companies decided to change the make, color, and model of their in-game rides, like the cars or the rams or leopards or raptors? Would there be a rush to buy gold so that players could keep current with the popular new mounts for this year, just like people go nuts buying a new car all the time? Lots of questions. Lots of questions connected with this whole subject. Well, before wrapping it up, I'm just going to throw in a piece of closing music, and on the other side, maybe a few more observations before my goodbyes for this week. So please enjoy this tune. I suppose a good closing question would be, what's next? Now, the only two things about a more real game environment that are missing, and I think that's because the physical hardware isn't capable of handling it yet, the two things that are missing are live voices from every player in real time, and boy would I hate that, that and VR HMDs, virtual reality head-mounted displays. Not just a monitor as a point of view, but a device that you wear on your head that totally immerses you into the audio and visual experience of the game world. Well, the technology for it is there already, but I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for it to be launched. You think game companies have pending lawsuits now? They'd be snowed under by the number of legal battles brought up if VR headgear were introduced. They've heard all the demands from the player community because they want them to take that next step. They want them to go into VR. But none of these companies want to be the first to get sued because little Johnny played the game for 6 hours wearing the helmet and then fell down a flight of stairs because he lost his real-world equilibrium after taking it off or got physically sick when he stopped playing. That actually happened, by the way. I searched for it, I swear. Somebody find it for me if you can, please. I searched for this article. They tested a virtual reality, real-world multiplayer on an airplane. I don't know who thought this up or why they thought it would be a good idea, but anyway, they had the VR headsets. They were literally immersed in this environment using head-mounted displays, and they were playing an online shoot-em-up of some kind and having a blast at it, but it was an intercontinental flight. It was one of them six-hour, almost never-ending flights, and it must have gone by very quickly for them because they were all having a great deal of fun playing this VR game. And then they landed, and the game ended, and they took off their head displays, their VR displays, and all got violently, physically ill. All of them had something to do with the inner ear and the way stepping from that reality as you perceive it for an extended length of time into the real world and what it does to your equilibrium. Well, MMORPGs and VR, let me know what you think. Let me know what you think. Go ahead and respond. Send something back. I'm getting more and more email responses, and it's fantastic. It's great. I love to hear from people. Jump onto that Frapper map. It's easy to find on the IDDFOS webpage. Just look right above the little doggy's head at the bottom on the right. That big square map thing, just click that. That'll take you right to it. And just keep two things in mind. If you play any of the MMOs, just keep these two things in mind. One, it really is just a game. It's all pixels. The gold, the weapons, the monsters, keep remembering that. It all goes away when you shut off the PC. And two, nothing is real in those worlds but the people at the keyboards pushing around the other avatars. The hills and the sky and the big flying killer beasties, they're beautiful nothings. But the people playing the game in there with you are every bit as real as you are, so try to play nice. Have a good time and don't treat other people like NPCs. If you keep a sense of perspective and a solid foot in the real world, you can win whatever game you play. Thank you extremely much for listening to episode 17. Thanks much also to Mr. T for his questions and audio files. And thanks also to Sarah for her feedback on this topic. Next week, in episode 18, I'll be explaining why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope all goes well with you. And best of days.